Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sock, a Catholic book blogger. Today we have with us Brian Kennelly. He's the author of two novels, Two Statues and To the Heights. And he's also the co-author of two nonfiction books, Doors of Mercy and Queen of Heaven. He is also the co-screenwriter of the 8-part documentary related to Queen of Heaven, which is airing on EWTN this week. Brian currently lives in Charlotte with his wife, Tina, who is due with their 4th child this Christmas. Welcome to the show, Brian Kennelly.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here, and this is a great study. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about it today. And what we're talking about is the entire study program, Queen of Heaven, Mary's Battle for You. And first, can you tell us how this study came to be?
Absolutely. So, of course, this year is the 100th anniversary of the apparitions at Fatima. So we here at Tan Books and St. Benedict Press knew that we wanted to do something to honor that and to bring awareness to that. But we knew that everyone else out there was also kind of going to be doing something Fatima. You know, there's a healthy competitiveness in the Catholic market. And so we were trying to think just how could we differentiate ourselves from what everyone else is going to do. And so my colleague, Rick Rotundi, sort of had the idea to step back a little bit or step up and tell the story of Mary that led up to Fatima. And so to not have that sort of narrow focus on Fatima, but do what we sort of unofficially around the office called an eternal biography of Mary. Because, you know, Fatima makes a heck of a lot more sense if you know the full story of Mary, and not only Mary, but her battle with the devil, with Satan. And so that was our goal, to sort of tell a story that culminated with Fatima, that gave Fatima a little bit more meaning by looking back thousands and thousands of years and sort of showing what happened, you know, before that.
Gotcha. Now, what was your role in the entire program? Because just to let everyone know, what we're talking about here is a hardcover book, a study guide, a leader's guide, and an 8-part video series that all of this encompasses.
Yeah, it is a lot. So the core, the very first, the core of the product line is the documentary, the video series. And it's an 8-part series. It can be done in parishes. And so parishes get together with groups of 20 or 30, just like a normal Bible study or whatever. And they can watch the documentary. And then, you know, there's a study guide that has discussion questions and things of that nature. And there's a leader guide that can lead the DRE or the priest or whoever through it. And so that's sort of the main thing. But then with all these projects that we do at St. Benedict Press like this, we always have a trade book as well that's just sort of a commemorative edition, nice, you know, if you want to just review the material, or maybe you're not a parish group kind of person and you just want to sit down quietly and read the material on your own, you can always engage with the content that way. And the book goes a little bit deeper than the series. But anyway, like I mentioned earlier, my colleague Rick Rotundi, he sort of had the 30,000-foot view idea of it, if you will, of this series that told a long story arc of Mary's life from sort of before time all the way through Fatima. And not only that, but her battle with Satan. So he had that idea, but he needed help writing it. And he's very much an idea man. But I was able to sort of take the baton from him and put pen to paper, and he helped write it as well. We really worked on it together. Mm-hmm. So we both wrote the scripts, and then, of course, we interviewed about 15 or 20 different Catholic, you know, scholars, theologians, priests, personalities from around the country who helped put their own stamp on the documentary, part of it at least. And then Rick and I were just able to take the script that we co-authored and turn it into a book. And that was really actually the easy part because the work was all done. And then I myself came up with the study guide, the questions and all that, the companion piece that goes with the parish guide and helps people run it in a parish. So there's definitely a lot of different ways to engage with this content, which is nice.
Yeah, and it's I'm going to say this a couple of times during our time here together. This is actually, the whole set is beautiful, full color, really nicely organized set.
Yeah, and thank you. And one thing I should mention, too, before I forget, is that, you know, there's definitely a lot of different ways to engage with it as far as whether you're reading it or doing a study guide or watching it. Mm-hmm. But then as far as just watching it, there's lots of different ways to engage with it. So it's like you mentioned, it's on EWTN. this week. But there's also, you know, a nice box DVD set that has the 4 hours of content broken up into four different discs. And then it's actually also on Amazon Video on Demand. So if you're just one of those people that goes on and has a smart TV and just watches your movies through Amazon the same way you would go watch, you know, Star Wars or something mm-hmm. like that, you can plug in Queen of Heaven, and I think each episode's only maybe $3.99, $4.99 or something like that. So you can watch it that way as well. And what we really love the most is if people can bring it to their parish. Because then you're bringing it to other people. You know, it's one thing to watch it in the privacy of your den, which is great, but if you can be a leader and bring it to your parish and get 25 other people in there, not only are you know, watching it and bringing it to other people, but then you discuss it, and it can have mm-hmm. you know, a lot more meaning.
Exactly. So now we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of this a little bit, and there were a couple points in the introduction that bear discussion, so I didn't even make it out of the introduction before I had some questions for this interview. And the first is the fact that you point out that, and I'm going to quote this, Queen of Heaven is not only the story of Mary, it is also the story of her greatest antagonist in the drama of salvation, the fallen angel who screamed no to God's plan in contrast to Mary's yes, the serpent who strikes at her offspring, the dragon who is enraged by her and seeks to devour her child, end quote. Simply put, this study is, in essence, about the battle for souls. And I think people are largely blind to that fact that this is happening around us each and every day.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing I've always loved Mary, and I've been saying the rosary every day for many years, and I've always had a strong relationship with her. But one thing this series did help me realize is how much of a warrior she is in our spiritual battlefield, that, you know, of the world and in our own souls. As I mentioned, this series covers thousands of years, and it has this sort of back and forth between her and Lucifer and Satan. And if you're not familiar with the topics, you might say, "Well, what do you mean by that?" Well, a perfect example is that this series it starts in the beginning of time, but it goes up through her time and, you know, the Gospels and then early church history, and then it goes into many of her most well-known apparitions. But it doesn't just tell the story of Lourdes, or it doesn't just tell the story of Guadalupe, it doesn't just tell the story of Fatima. It also shows what's going on in the historical context around these apparitions. So, for example, at Lourdes, we show how the French Revolution had come in and sort of ravished the church in France, the church's eldest daughter. And then Mary came and visited Lourdes, and obviously then the church had a great turnaround in France. The devil sort of had a hold on the Aztec Empire. They were doing these human sacrifices and things of that nature. And then Mary came, Lady of Guadalupe came and set that culture free. And then you have the juxtaposition with communism and Fatima in that story as well that most people know about. So there's always this sort of back and forth between good and evil, and it always seems to be Mary that God sends to sort of rescue us as her children. And so getting back to your point today, I mean, you know, the story of right now, it's happening right now, so we don't have as good an understanding of what's going on as we do looking back through history, because we have the benefit of hindsight. But you're absolutely right that we obviously need her now more than ever with all the chaos that's going on mm-hmm. All over the world. And we talk a little bit about that in the last part of the trade book. This isn't in the documentary, but we go into how she can sort of bring Jesus back into the public square, into the world at large, and that will help us solve a lot of our problems.
Yeah, and I want to give you a little bit of props here for St. Benedict Press, Tan Books. You guys have been coming out with some very pointed books to help people with this spiritual warfare we're seeing. We had Paul Thigpen's manual for spiritual warfare. You guys have on the slate to come out, the Spiritual Warfare Bible. I think there's another book coming out relative to spiritual warfare too. So this obviously is important to us today. And as a publisher, it's important to you that you're bringing out these type of resources for people to be able to use.
Oh, absolutely. And when we had Manual for Spiritual Warfare and we saw how successful it was, you know, that was a big determinant. We said, gosh, people are hungry for this, and they need this knowledge, first of all, that there even is a battle. That's the first step, really, to even know that you're in a battle. But then you need these tools. And what's the best tool? Well, you know, the best tool are the sacraments and the Eucharist. But one of the best tools is Mary and the Rosary and things of that, and any of these Marian devotions that the study goes into. And so we were able to really drive that point home by making it about a battle. You know, we think of Mary as this tender, loving, sweet mother, and she is. And if you look at our cover of Queen of Heaven, she has that sort of genteel look about mm-hmm. her. But then you look at the subtitle and it says, Mary's Battle for You. And we've got this sort of shield emblem that's there under the title. And so we wanted that sort of juxtaposition of the tenderness, but also the warrior princess. And I think the series does a good job of showing both those qualities.
And indeed it does. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk more about it. You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Pete Sauce and Captain Book Blogger here at Brian Canelli this week. And we'll be I'm Pete Sox, the host of Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Head on over to my show page at breadboxmedia.com and support my show and our work here at Breadbox Media by becoming a premium member today. And we believe it's more about giving than receiving. When you become a premium member for just $9.99 a month, you unlock incredible discounts from our sponsors like Rugged Rosaries, Catholic Books Direct, Lifeboat Coffee, the Mass Box, and the Harrisburg Senators, just to name a few. And it's even better. Every month, Breadbox Media chooses a nonprofit organization to partner with, and 10% of every premium membership is dedicated to that nonprofit. Join the revolution in Catholic media. Become a premium member by visiting my page today. Media. I'm your host, Steve Cox, Catholic Book Blogger with Brian Canelli. This week we're talking about the study series Queen of Heaven, Mary's Battle for Souls, recently released by St. Benedict Press. And Brian, there's an analogy that closes out the introduction that I really liked, and I've never thought of it this way before, and it goes like this, and I'll quote it. In the game of chess, it is the king who rules the board, the one who determines the fate of the game, but it is the queen who at the king's willing flies about protecting her subjects from the enemy. Now, Brian, that's an awesome image, and actually I want to steal that and use it from now on, but many Protestant denominations minimize the role of Mary, but quite frankly, she is Jesus' warrior on the playing field, is she not?
She is, and I appreciate you appreciating that analogy. We were sitting in one of my coworker's offices, and he has a really cool kind of decorative chess set in his office, and we were just talking about the series, and the thought came to me that it very much is like chess. And we were talking about how God sends, or Jesus sends Mary down here, if you will, to shoo off the devil mm-hmm. every so often, whether it be Guadalupe, Lourdes, Fatima, or all the other apparitions. And so I had this image come to me of the queen just sort of sweeping across the chess field or the chessboard of history and vanquishing all these enemies. And you're right, the Protestants, unfortunately, they don't value her as much. I mean, there's that whole misunderstanding of worship and veneration. They don't understand the difference. And they're very quick to point out, you know, they like that passage, no one comes to the Father except through me, when Jesus was saying, and of course that's true. No Catholic would say that you go to God through, you know, that Mary, that we're worshiping Mary. Mm-hmm. But just in the same way that a pastor or a priest or a deacon or a friend or a father can lead you to Jesus, so can Mary. She can be the mediator to the mediator kind of thing. And right. who better to do that than her? I mean, she knows him better than anyone. So it is unfortunate that she's forgotten and neglected in many circles of the world. But nonetheless, it's still true that she is that warrior queen that flies all over the board. And the one of the most important things in that quote is that we still acknowledge that the king is the king in that chess analogy, right? I mean, the game depends on whether or not the king has been taken.
Correct.
But he still has the ability to send his queen all over the board, you know, getting all the bad guys. And so that was sort of what came to me there in that moment. And then, you know, I'm hoping that analogy can help people kind of make sense of this as they go through the series, because you actually see that throughout history. Jesus has been sending his mother all over the chessboard of history to save us and vanquish our enemies.
Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about this, something else just popped into my mind. You know, as a convert, I converted in 96, as listeners know, but that was one of the neat things about Catholicism I was never exposed to previously, was the apparitions of Mary. And to sit and ponder that early on in my conversion, that to me it was is easy to accept that, because Jesus built this church, founded the church, started a church. He wouldn't just walk away from it for 2,000 mm-hmm. years, because, you know, God in the Old Testament realized how dumb we could be as people. So why would he walk away from it now? So it was easy for me to accept the fact that in some way, you know, Christ is still involved in the church through the Holy Spirit and in other ways. And it only seemed natural to me that Mary would be the one that he sent to help us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, the church is quick to say, you know, these aren't dogmas of the faith. I mean,
right.
You're not required the same way, you know, you have to believe that Jesus is in the Eucharist if you want to be Catholic, but you don't have to believe that she actually came at Fatima. But to completely neglect these things would be a mistake. And, you know, what's great about Fatima, which is so much in the news right now, is it does have a bit of proof with it. I mean, when you say that, you know, Mary appeared to Saint so-and-so in the 13th century, and you tell that to a person and they go, oh, okay, great, but, you know, what does that do for me? When you start talking about the story of Fatima and you say that 70,000 people or whatever it was saw this miracle of the sun, and then you can go on Google and see the pictures of 70,000 people sitting there and read these articles from these secular newspapers who admitted that they were coming out to mock, you know, what was happening with these three shepherd children, and then they saw what they saw and changed their minds. I mean, those are things that are there that are real. And so these apparitions can do a lot. Even though they're not dogs of the faith, they can do a lot to bring us, you know, closer to Christ, which is the ultimate goal.
Certainly. Now, early on in the book, it stated that Mary is a woman God dreamed of before the world was made. Before he created angels, before he created anything, God had Mary in mind. Why is that?
Well, in that expression, I can take credit for the chess analogy, but I can't take credit for that expression, because that was Fulton Sheen, who is
yes.
my favorite writer, hands down. In his book on Mary, The World's First Love, he's got a poem to her, and he says that Mary was the woman God dreamed of before the world was made. But as we point out in the series, his sort of poetic musings there are backed up by church teaching. Because if you look at the Catechism, if you look at Lumen Gentium, which is a Vatican document, it calls Mary the predestined mother. Now, that's one little word there that you can overlook, but predestined mother. I think it was John Paul who wrote, you know, from all eternity she was planned. So from all eternity. So that we started focusing in on that, on where do we start this story? You know, we said we wanted to tell an eternal biography of Mary. But the tricky thing about that is that you don't really necessarily just start in Nazareth with the girl in the New Testament. First, you'd have to go back to the Old Testament, because we go through all the different various foreshadowings or types of her when we talk about the New Covenant, or Eve when we talk about her as the New Eve. So she's alive in the Old Testament in just these sort of glimpses and foreshadowings of that. Just as in the sense that she's alive after the Bible with these apparitions, you know, she was alive before it, before Nazareth, in the Old Testament with these types that we see for her. But then we went back even further when we started thinking about, okay, what does it mean with predestined mother? And we get into something in the documentary, although it's not a huge part of it, so I don't want to make a bigger deal than it is, but we talk about the Franciscan thesis, which basically states that that Jesus was going to become man. God was going to take the flesh of man even before the fall. And we get wrapped up in thinking the only reason Jesus became man was because of the fall of Adam and Eve. But if you look in the Catechism, it gives four or five reasons for the incarnation. I mean, one of them is to redeem us from our sins, but another one, a couple others, you know, to share in the divine life, for us to know God better. And all those things could still be true even if Adam and Eve hadn't have failed, fallen. So what we believe about Mary. I mean, she's the predestined mother. We believe that she was a plan in God's mind from the get-go. Now, the specifics of that plan might still be lost on us, but we get into that, and it's very intriguing to think about that. We get into the test of the angels, and a lot of people say that Satan fell because of his pride, but Satan was the wisest and smartest of all the angels. Mm-hmm. So for him to think that he was just going to sort of replace God or take over, I mean, that would be the equivalent to me saying I'm going to fly or something. I mean, I'm a rational person. I know I'm not going to fly. So what was it that riled his pride? And a lot of theologians have said that it was because God showed his plan for the incarnation to all the angels, and said, I'm going to become one of these little slimy creatures called man. And I'm going to take my flesh through this woman, and you all need to bow down before this woman. And so that is really the crux of our first episode of why Lucifer hated Mary so much, because she was going to be this queen that gave God flesh, and he just couldn't get over that. So it was that riled his pride. So that might have been a longer answer than you were looking for, but that is really episode one. You know, that really sets the stage for this battle. And then, of course, we go into Genesis 3:15, where God says, I'll put enmity between you and the woman. And I always found it was interesting that he said the woman. You know, he didn't say a woman.
Right.
He said the woman, as if, you know, we could almost kind of jokingly picture the serpent going, you know, if he didn't know about Mary, he would have said, wait, who's the woman? You know, he wouldn't have said, but if he said a woman, he'd say, okay, so there's this new lady that you're introducing into this story. But he said the woman, as if the serpent would have been familiar with her already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very intriguing. It's definitely not, you know, one of the central tenets of the Catholic Church by any stretch, but it's an intriguing thing that we explore here in Queen of Heaven.
Yes, it is. So now we're going to get a little off track here, but I guess it's okay because you did it in the book, so. You talk about Maria Vigretta's spiritual revelations that she received about Mary and Jesus, and they were recorded in the massive four-volume set, The Mystical City of God, which conveniently St. Benedict Press carries as well. Some things I like to mention are that she was declared venerable in 1679, and she's among the very rare group of those whose bodies are incorrupt. In fact, she has been so for 340-some years. Can you tell us a little bit about this set of books and the revelations that she received?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll be the first to admit I haven't read. There's a four-volume series we have, and I think it's well over 1,000 pages when you put it all together. So I can't claim to have read the whole thing. But we were very careful to explain in the documentary that you have to rely on church teaching first and foremost.
Yes.
And just as we mentioned a second ago, you're not. As a Catholic, you are not required to believe that Fatima happened or anything of that nature. And, of course, the same can be said for Maria Vigretta's writings as well, The Mystical City of God. But that being said, we used her writings as what you might call pious legend. It helps us get a picture of what might have happened. She had these visions of the test of the angels, or the trial of the angels, as some people call it. And it was very much what I just described a moment ago, where first the angels were shown, you know, God. And they all said, wow, this is great. We love God. And then the second test was okay, he revealed to them that he was going to become a man. And many of the angels rejoiced, but Lucifer did not, because he said, wait a second, I'm going to have to fall down before this creature that's lower than me. But what Maria says is that it was the third test that really sent Lucifer over the edge, and that was when God revealed that he was going to take flesh through this woman. And then he said, you know, it's one thing for me to bow down before, you know, you as a God man. It's another thing for me to call this woman my queen. And so that was sort of the enmity, where he just hated Mary from the beginning. Now, again, none of this is not in the Bible. There's parts that you can, there's other parts of the Bible where you can sort of glean certain things from. Revelation 12, where, you know, you see the woman giving birth to the child with the iron rod, and soon after that, the dragon sweeps away one third of the stars, which is a reference to the angels' rebellion, that he took one third of the angels. So there's things like that can kind of back it up. But Maria, the beauty of what Maria does with her visions is that if you go into it with the right mindset, if you sit down and you open it and you say, look, this is not gospel, I'm not required to believe this, but let me go ahead and read this. And what it does is, even if not every single word is perfectly true, it forms this incredible vision in your imagination of what that time and the other things that she goes into with the rest of Mary's life. It helps us have those meditations. You know, we think when we say the rosary, we're supposed to meditate on the joyful mysteries, the sorrowful. We're supposed to picture these times. And it's kind of hard for us to do that because we weren't there. But her book almost reads as a novel, as a pious legend, that puts us back there, and it helps us think about those things, and it helps us meditate on them. And in a mysterious way, we're able to make more sense of them, and we have benefits and graces that come from it.
Yeah.
So her writings, again, I didn't read all of them. Luckily, Tan has a abridged version of her real thing is four-volume series, thousands of pages, but we have one copy that's an abridged that I was able to read, and it's about 400 pages. The abridged is 400 pages. So it was a help in writing this series, not so much because I used all of it, but it just helped me get that mental picture of what was happening, you know, before creation.
Right, and I haven't read it cover to cover either. I do have the four-volume set, and it's like 2,000. Your website says it's 2,676 pages combined. Just survey gets an idea of how massive this is. But I agree with you. You know, when you go and you read this, it's not – I've always approached it as a novel, but it gives you – it helps you – paint the picture a little bit better in your mind of the events. So with that,
absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back to dive more into Queen of Heaven. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back. For souls. And I'd like to continue with, in chapter 3, you named it The Day Creation Held Its Breath, Brian, and you're referring to the Annunciation. And it might seem hard for us to fathom, but frankly, that singular event did carry, you know, that much weight. It could have gone either way. Mary did not have to say yes. She had free will, just like we do. And Mary was not God's puppet. So our world was literally hanging in the balance for about 30 seconds, wasn't it?
It was, and it's kind of frightening when you think about it that way, but luckily we know what she said. But the tagline of this series, which Rick, my colleague, came up with, is it's a battle between the angel who said no and the woman who said yes.
Mm-hmm.
The angel obviously being Lucifer, who essentially said no, non servium, I will not serve you, God. And Mary, you know, and he did that through his pride, and then Mary, through her humility, said, yes, I will serve, I'll be your handmaid. So that, what Fulton Sheen has a great commentary in his book, The World's First Love on Mary, where he, I think it's chapter 2, where he talks about freedom, and he has a great discourse on just what freedom is in general. But his main point in the chapter is that he says God could have, well, he couldn't have actually, but what his point was going to be, we kind of wonder sometimes why God couldn't have just created Jesus from scratch. Why didn't he just send Jesus down in a bolt of lightning? Why didn't he form him from the dust of the earth, the clay of the earth, like he did with Adam? You know, why Mary? And it all comes back to freedom and free will. In order to, you know, Eve and Adam, they brought ruin to our species mm-hmm. through free will. You know, they abused free will. So in order for that to be reversed and bring us back to life, it had to be an act of free will. So he had to go to a creature, in this case Mary, this woman, and basically request, ask her permission that he could become man. And only through her free will was Jesus able to come into the world. So in a way, God's hands were kind of tied. I mean, they weren't, because he's God. He could probably do whatever he wants. But it had to be this act of free will for her to become the new Eve and sort of reverse the curse that Eve brought into the world. And one interesting thing we talk about in the series is whenever you see an angel coming to a human being in the Old Testament, you know, it's more of a command. Don't touch your child, Abraham, or, you know, do this, don't do that. But when Gabriel came, it was more of a question. Mm-hmm. He was saluting her as a queen and saying, hey, will you do this? And that is a drastically different tone than you see from other angels, where they come with, you almost get this kind of view of this stern angel of sort of, you know, standing in the way of the donkey with the sword, and, you know, all these things where the angels are commanding people to do something. But with Mary, it was the exact opposite. It had to be a free choice of her free will.
Yeah. So another part of the book, you go into the seven sorrows of Mary, but you actually dive into a dimension that I found fascinating and never considered, and that is somewhat Mary's dark night of the soul and the night of faith. And there's two powerful quotes that you talk about in this chapter. The first being, again, from Fulton Sheen's The World's First Love, where he states that Christ began detaching himself from his mother, seemingly alienating his affections with growing unconcern, only to reveal at the very end that what he was doing was introducing her through sorrow to a new and deeper dimension of love. Then you immediately follow that with a quote from St. John Paul II, where he stated in Redemptoris Mater, the sorrows of Our Lady bore throughout her life were a night of faith through which one has to draw near to the invisible one and to live in intimacy with the mystery. So what we are saying is here is not only can we experience dark night of the souls, but our Blessed Mother in some sense did as well, correct?
Exactly. And, you know, first we should say what a night of, you know, a dark night of the soul is.
Yes.
I mean, St. John of the Cross, you know, wrote a poem centuries ago, and he didn't actually use that term. I read that somebody else gave it that term later after he had written this long poem. But it basically just talks about that sort of that feeling like God has left you, that sort of absence in your life where you have this emptiness. And we all experience it, these dry spells where we're trying to pray, we're trying to have that love for God, and it's just not coming. The saints have it in a much more exaggerated form because they're holier. And it was said that Mother Teresa suffered from this for most of her adult life, and same with Little Flower.
Mm-hmm.
They had this feeling like God wasn't there, like God didn't exist, he wasn't with them, he didn't love them. And the question is, why? Why would God do this? And the answer, I believe, is that he's trying to make you stronger. You know, it doesn't. If you love God when you're at Christmas morning and you're opening your presents with your family and the fire's on and it's snowing outside and you go, gosh, I love God, he's giving me all this. You know, that's easy. That's easy to love God.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder to love God when you're hanging on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's what it can feel like when you feel like God, you go through a period of a week, a month, a year of not feeling like he's there. But what you're doing, he's making sure you love him for his sake alone and not these rewards, if you want to call them that he would give you. So that's kind of what the dark night is. You come through them stronger because you learn to love God for his sake and not for any blessings that he would give you. So when you think about it with Mary, it's interesting. You would think as the mother of God that she would have all these glories, you know, showered down upon her and these parades and these things. And of course she does now because we know she is. But at the time in her life, in her earthly life, she didn't have that. And this series opened my eyes to the fact that basically every single time Mary is mentioned in the scripture, almost every time, it's a moment of sorrow. Right after the Annunciation, which obviously was probably a joyous moment for her, she travels off to see Elizabeth, and when she comes back, Joseph is going to divorce her. That probably didn't feel very good. Of course, he didn't. He was visited. He was a just man. He was going to divorce her quietly, but he didn't because the angel came and told him not to. But then she has, she goes to Bethlehem, and there's no room at the inn. That was probably a very difficult journey. She has her actual sorrows at the flight into Egypt when all these babies were being killed, and she has to run away, the prophecy of Simeon, when she's told that a sword will pierce her heart. And then, of course, the passion and death of her son. I mean, obviously, all these things were horrible, horrible things that she had to go through. But one thing that was interesting that I didn't know about until we did this series was it was in Jesus' adult life there were even a couple instances where she might not have had to go through some sort of agony, but there was some confusion, some emptiness. There's two parts in the Gospel of Luke. There's a time where a woman shouts out to Jesus, blessed is the woman who bore you, and he says, no, blessed are they who hear the word of God and keep it. It's almost as if he had this chance to honor Mary, and he didn't there. Why is that? And then there's another chance where he's in a room or a house, and somebody says, your mother and your brethren are outside. And instead of saying, clear a path, I want my mother to come through. She's the best woman in the world. Jesus says, my mother and brethren are those who hear the word of God and keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So why? I mean, that's the sort of the confusing thing. And then why all this other sorrow that Mary had to go through? And it was really the most intense dark night of all. And what Fulton Sheen was saying, John Paul II was saying, where you quoted there, that we quoted in the series, is that she had to go through this dark night. She had to deny a good, which was being his mother. There's a very good thing about mothers and sons and that mother-son, mother-child relationship. But Jesus knew he had to prepare her to lessen that bond in order to increase the spiritual bond, because she would ultimately become the mother of humanity. And so she had to go through that dark night, that period of emptiness, of confusion, of desolation, of suffering, in order to come into the fullness of her glory after the Assumption, where she could be not just the earthly mother of Jesus of Nazareth, which in and of itself is a great thing, but she had to deny that good. She had to give up her son, literally, at the foot of the cross, for a greater good, which is our salvation, and this is just becoming the mother of humanity. Mm-hmm. And so when you begin to think about it that way, it kind of makes sense that why Mary would have to go through that, and also why we would have to go through that. And incidentally, that's why she's such a tremendous source of support when we're going through something, when we are having issues and doubt and confusion and suffering and pain and agony. We turn to her as the mother of sorrow because she's been through it, and so she can help us through it.
And, I think there's this just popped in my mind when you're talking about this. I think there's a disconnect with us sometimes with biblical figures like Mary, because we may not see them for their humanity, but they definitely had humanity, definitely had the same struggles. We had Joseph and Mary, finding Jesus in the temple, what that must have been like, running around trying to figure out where their kid went when he was supposed to be right behind them.
Absolutely. That was one of the ones I forgot to mention. That's probably one of the hardest ones she had.
Yeah. I mean, they faced similar situations that we do today. And I think people lose sight of that. And, their example is what helps build us up in our own lives.
Oh, yeah. And Mary, more than anything, I mean, sometimes my Protestant friends are confused about my relationship with Mary, and for lots of different reasons. But one thing that I try to explain to them is that she was obviously, Jesus is the source of our salvation, but the fact remains he was still God. And so sometimes we need that mediator to bring us closer to him. And she was a human being. She knew what it was like to be a human being, even though she was sinless. So she can sympathize with us. When we go through something, when we're an alcoholic, we go to AA because we want to be around other alcoholics and help us get through something. If we've had a death of a child, we go to help support groups with other people who have lost children. We like to seek out people who have been through what we've been through. And Mary has seen it all. I mean, she really has been through it all. And so she is able to shepherd us through those times and bring us out the other side where her son is waiting.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take one last quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. We've been talking today with Brian Tinelli about the study program Queen of Heaven, Mary's Battle for Souls, an excellent program I highly recommend. And as we continue, Brian, in this book, you touch upon Christ's statement that the gates of hell would not prevail against his church. And that's not only a striking statement to apply globally, but I think particular here in the United States, where the church is shunned in some respect, it's marginalized when possible, and people place other material priorities before God. How can Mary help us overcome this, dare I say, slothful quagmire our country seems to be in right now?
Well, yeah, I think we talk about that part of the scripture in lesson five, session five, when we talk about Guadalupe and how Mary came to, the Aztec Empire and broke through their gates and, helped basically save a civilization. I mean, they were trapped behind the horns of Satan, basically doing all this human sacrifice and cutting out the hearts of people and killing babies and slaves and things like that. You know, that Rick, my colleague, made the point that a lot of people, when they hear that passage from Scripture that the gates of the netherworld will never prevail or whatever, they think of it more of as a defensive kind of way. You know, we're going to huddle up behind these walls and the bad guys aren't going to get in. But really what Rick was arguing, what we talk about, is that it isn't really just that. It's more we're going to burst through the bad guys' gates. You know, the bad guys have these fortified places all over the earth, and we're going to bring the gospel. We're going to bust down those walls and come through the gate and bring the gospel to the people within. And of course, Guadalupe is one of the most dramatic examples of that, which is why we use that story as the part to discuss this point. The Spanish were having some success converting the Indians, but not like they did until after Guadalupe, when millions of people were coming in. So Mary helped come in and sort of eradicate that civilization from the grasp of Satan. Same thing with the French Revolution. We talked about that. And then, communism in Fatima. So Mary, we actually released a book not long ago by Carrie Gress, who's actually in Queen of Heaven as one of our expert contributors.
Yep.
But she called her book The Marian Option. Mm-hmm. And it was a response to Rod Dreher's The Benedict Option, which is a very well-known book now that came out, I think, earlier this year. It basically said we need to do like St. Benedict does. We need to retreat from this society that's become so corrupt. You know, like St. Benedict went into a cave and founded this monastery, and he kind of rebuilt civilization from the inside out. And I think there's something to that. There definitely is, and Carrie is quick to point out she's not necessarily saying that the Marian option is a direct refutation of the Benedict option, but she's just saying if we look at history, any time that a civilization has turned to Mary, it's begun to flourish. And flourish in an amazing way, whether it be, the arts or architecture or just, bringing people into the church, whatever it is. Anytime we turn to her, we can have a profound difference on civilization. And so there's little things we can do. And if we turn to Mary in little ways, just praying the rosary every day, that was the message of Fatima. Just pray the rosary every day, and mm-hmm. you'll be amazed at how much. I started praying the rosary every day about 8 or 9 years ago, and I was in banking, and I was not happy. But I started praying the rosary. I was happy in general, but I didn't like my job.
Right.
And I started praying the rosary just one day. I don't know why, but I started praying the rosary on the way to work. And I was just kind of an average Catholic, you know, went to Mass. And I would have never guessed within 10 years I would have been writing a documentary that, you know, thousands and thousands of people have seen about Mary. So it's just, it has to start somewhere little. It has to start somewhere small. And so if we turn to her in these small, ordinary ways throughout the day, it might not seem like it's going to have an effect on the world at large, but it will. And we'll go out into the world. We won't necessarily cocoon ourselves in. Mm-hmm. We'll go out and take Jesus to other people, because anytime we have her with us, we have him with us.
Right. Disenchanted with the secular world and moving on to a Catholic ministry, I wouldn't know anything about that, Brian. I just want to point out once again, well, you mentioned Carrie Gress in her book, The Marian Option. She was a guest on my show, so if anybody wants to dig back through the archives, they can listen to what she had to say about that book. Excellent book as well.
Oh, wonderful.
But I do want to point out again that I think this is a magnificent study, and you mentioned earlier, and I agree, that it can be done in the privacy of your own home by yourself or with your family, but the better thing to do is to bring it into your parish and expose as many people to studies of this nature, either Queen of Heaven or Door of Mercy, which St. Benedict Press had released last year, I believe it was. They're great tools for evangelization, great for bringing people together as a group and study. And what I'd like to do right now is get some tips from you for people who may be, A, never done this type of thing before and are a little uncomfortable with leading such a study. You know, I think everybody's capable of doing it. They just need the bravery to step out and do it. So what are some tips? And you do mention some in the leader guide, but for those listening today, what are some tips that we can put in place to be able to bring this into a parish setting?
Well, the first thing is just know where you can get it from, and that's us at St. Benedict Press. If you go to stbenedictpress.com, you can find our number for our parish team, or really you can just call our customer service team and they'll get you to the parish people. But we have four or five parish reps that that you know cover various states, so they'll guide you to the right person, and you can get more information on just what comes in a pack and how you bring it and how much it costs and all that kind of logistical stuff. But the main thing I would think is just, you know, it can be a little bit difficult but it can be a little intimidating to, mm-hmm. to bring it to a parish. But it really can just have a profound difference on people's lives. And you don't realize it, but we have all these, we get stories, you know, emails and phone calls of people who, you know, they hadn't been to church in a while, but they were driving by and they saw a poster out front for some Bible study group, and they said, well, maybe I'll go to that. And then something was said, and now they're at church every Sunday. You just never know when you're going to have a difference in someone's life. So, you know, you have to get over your fears of speaking in front of people or taking initiative and gathering a group up, because just like anything else in life, you'll be amazed how much joy can come out of putting in a little bit of work. You know, it takes a lot of willpower to get out and get in that garden and work in the hot mm-hmm. sun and all that kind of stuff. But then when you see the flowers start to come up, you know, you see it was worth it. So I think if you can just really know that you'll make a difference in someone's life, if you're bringing them to Mary, you know, ultimately that's going to bring them to Jesus, and that's a good thing. But one thing I will mention about the parish program specifically, if you watch it on Amazon, if you watch it on EWTN, or if you get the DVD, you're only going to be able to see the documentary. But there's a second video component hosted by Father Patrick Winslow. I co-wrote some scripts with him where he actually goes into everyday life application of this stuff. He goes into Marian, different various Marian venerations. So here's why we say the rosary. Here's why we put up images of Mary in our house. Here's why we go on pilgrimages. Here's why we pray to Mary. Here's why we consecrate ourselves to Mary. So there's eight different everyday things that people can do, and it's sort of apologetic. It's explaining, like, here's why we pray to Mary. And so the first documentary tells the story of Mary's life, and it's riveting and it's exciting. You're learning a lot. But then the second video turns it inward and says, okay, how does this affect you and your soul and your everyday life and how you live out your relationship with Mary and Jesus? So there's that second component that you can only get in the parish study. And so there's really some value there that if you have somebody who says, oh, I already saw it on EWTN, you can say, well, you didn't see everything. And we've got this study guide that has, you know, in between, you know, for all the sessions, we have these study guides where people can discuss the questions, you know, reread some of the excerpts from the series and things of that nature. Obviously, a lot of beautiful artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really a lot you can bring to the table if you bring this to your parish.
Yeah, definitely. I've been very impressed with this one. The Doors of Mercy, which you had last year, I believe it was, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I want to give you a little airspace here to talk about any future studies you may have coming from St. Benedict Press.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. Well, yes, you're right. Doors of Mercy we did for the Jubilee Year of Mercy. That just kind of fit, and that was a tour through salvation history, and then it got into the Divine Mercy with St. Faustina. As I mentioned at the onset, this one came about because this was the 100th year of anniversary of Fatima, so we wanted to have this be a Marian product. Next year, as far as I know, there's not really necessarily there's always something going on in the church, but as far as I know, there hasn't been a declaration that mm-hmm. this will be the year of whatever. But we got about 6 months ago decided we were going to do something on the Beatitudes, because I think the Beatitudes are just they're sort of neglected. I mean, they're a passage you hear in the scriptures, you know, in church maybe once a year or something like that. But what do they really mean? And they're a little bit paradoxical, you know. I mean, blessed are the meek. What does that mean? Don't you want me to be strong? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something very interesting about the Beatitudes. So this program is called Kingdom of Happiness, and it shows how the true happiness can only come from living like Christ, like living out his Beatitudes. And the really powerful thing is we have a teaching video done by Father Jeffrey Kirby, who was the host of Doors of Mercy, and then he's also one of the guests in Queen of Heaven. He does a teaching video where he basically just explains the Beatitude and has a quick teaching on it, almost like a little homily. And then paired with that, we've made these really powerful, and I mean powerful, short profile videos on people living out the Beatitudes. So for Blessed Are the Merciful, we got in touch with a person we know down in South Carolina whose brother was a cop and was killed in the line of duty, but she petitioned for the person to not get the death penalty. So she's Blessed as the Merciful, and it tells her story. We have Blessed Are the Pure of Heart. We went over to Holy Angels in Belmont, North Carolina, which is a home for severely disabled children, and did a story on them and the people who care for them. For Blessed Is the Peacemakers, we did a story on Miravia, which is the former room at the inn, which is a home for unwed mothers, and these nuns and these lay people who bring in these young teenage girls who have gotten pregnant and have nowhere to go. So we have these powerful videos that show the Beatitudes being lived out. And then just like with Queen of Heaven and Doors of Mercy, there's a study guide that goes along with it that provides discussion questions, and there's a leader guide that walks the leader through the, you know, how to go through the group in the mm-hmm. evening. So that one will be out, I believe, in January, and that one is called Kingdom of Happiness, Living Out the Beatitudes in Everyday Life.
Awesome. Sounds like I'm going to have you back on the show in January.
Would love to. I didn't write this one, but I can certainly talk about it because I edited the whole thing.
Awesome. Well, Brian, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us today. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Oh, no, just thank you for what you're doing, for spreading the good news, not just about our products, but about the faith in general, and just everyone pick up Queen of Heaven wherever you can, whether you want to read it or watch it or bring it to your parish. Any way you can engage with it, it'll bring you closer to Mary, and she'll bring you closer to her son.
Awesome. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, and until next time, God bless.